Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, and you in midair. Send in the clown. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around and one who can't move. But where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Just when I stopped opening doors, finally finding the one that I wanted was yours. Making my entrance again with my usual flair. Sure of my lines. Nobody's there. Don't you love a farce? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Don't bother. They're here. Isn't it rich? Isn't it queer? Losing my timing this late in my career. But where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Well, maybe next year. That one seemed appropriate for the Republican convention. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show. And we're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, so we'd really appreciate it if you head on over to freedomslips.com and make a donation on our behalf. They have a lot of great shows, and it's a really good, a good network. And I'm very proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome special guests Larry Pinkney, Frank Cordero, Anthony Rayson, M.K. Davis, and Phil Ferruggio. And so tonight we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Port Orange, in Des Moines, in northern Minnesota, in Fort Lauderdale, in Minneapolis, in Chicago, in Benton, Mississippi, and wherever you are. The Chilcot Report reveals the lies of Tony Blair in order to get England into the war in Iraq. When will we have the American Chilcot Report? Well, how about the Moonrock Books Report? We have new releases at Moonrock Books. One is entitled America Nuked on 9/11. Another one is called And the White Rose Blooms in Wisconsin. And this is a biography of Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett. We also have a new edition of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, the book banned by Amazon, as well as And Nobody Died at Boston Either. And also, And I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either. So we have at Moonrock Books, America Nuked on 9/11, White Rose Blooms in Wisconsin, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, Nobody Died at Boston Either, and I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either. It's the revolution. Moonrock Books at moonrockbooks.com. We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality, judiciously as you will act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too. And that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to just study what we do. Karl Rove, as explained to Ron Suskind, the New York Times Magazine. I didn't know this, and now I do. In Darwin's The Descent of Man, Darwin writes only twice of survival of the fittest, but 95 times of love. Just saying. My recommendations, YouTube, Patrice O'Neill, flushing Bin Laden down the toilet. Jill Stein, YouTube. Jill Stein appeared on Fox News, made their head spin. And Jill Stein, the Tim Black interview. And once again, we hear from Randall in Stevens Point. I'm not really talking to any of you, he says, because you know why. I got my gun, my dog, my truck. I'm heading for the woods, then up the mountain. Tell Bubba Jean I always loved her. Don't follow me. I got on my camo jeans. You'd never find me. When you hear about the big shootout and all that, then that'll be me. Well, crap then. How about this? Jill Stein, huh? In her Power to the People plan, she writes, it's time to build a people's movement to end unemployment and poverty, avert climate catastrophe, build a sustainable just economy, and recognize the dignity and human rights of every person. She promises deep system change that will move America from the greed and exploitation of corporate capitalism to a human-centered economy that puts people, planet, and peace over profit. And then that's it. Randall's transmission goes out, goes dark, and we really don't know what's happening up there on that hill high up in the mountains overlooking America. Maybe it's in the Hollywood Hills, maybe in Appalachia, maybe in Loveland, Colorado, or Western Missouri. At this point, dude, we just don't know.
Hello, folks. Well, it seems that Donald Trump's speech tonight at the Republican convention in Cleveland has been plagiarized. The Associated Press has received this following rushed transcript of the speech. If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and/or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent. For the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state. The individual is handicapped by becoming face-to-face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. And thus, in the primitive simplicity of their minds, they more readily fall victims to the big lie than the small lie, since they themselves often tell small lies in little matters, but would be ashamed to resort to large-scale falsehoods. It would never come into their heads to fabricate colossal untruths, and they would not believe it. Others could have the impudence to distort the truth so infamously. Even though the facts which prove this to be so may be brought clearly to their minds, they will still doubt and waver and will continue to think that there may be some other explanation. We'll know that our disinformation campaign has worked when everything the American public believes is false. It also gives us a very special secret pleasure to see how unaware the people around us are of what's really happening to them. The illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer. What good fortune for those in power that the people do not think. An evil exists that threatens every man, woman, and child of this great nation. We must take steps to ensure our domestic security and protect our homeland. Through clever and constant application of propaganda, people can be made to see paradise as hell, and also the other way around, to consider the most wretched sort of life as paradise. Democracy is beautiful in theory. In practice, it is a fallacy. You in America will see that someday. It is humiliating to remain with our hands folded while others write history. It matters little who wins. To make a people great, it is necessary to send them to battle, even if you have to kick them in the pants. That is what I shall do. I would like to thank Providence and the Almighty for choosing me of all people to be allowed to wage this battle for Germany. Today, Christians stand at the head of our country. We want to fill our culture again with the Christian spirit. We want to burn out all the recent immoral developments in literature, in the theater, and in the press. In short, we want to burn out the poison of immorality which has entered into our whole life and culture as a result of liberal excess during the past years. War alone brings up to their highest tension all human energies and imposes the stamp of nobility upon the peoples who have the courage to make it. The fascist state must not forget that all means must serve the ends. It must not let itself be confused by the drivel about so-called freedom of the press. It must make sure that the media is placed in the service of this state.
Our first guest of the evening is M.K. Davis. M.K. Davis has been researching the Patterson Sasquatch film for the last 18 years. He's traveled extensively and has amassed one of the largest collections of images from the film. M.K. has trekked the Bluff Creek drainage of Northern California on many occasions, and his observations have led to several important discoveries on the film itself.
Hello.
Well, hello, M.K. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Okay. Well, you know, there's been some news in the Bigfoot world the last few days, and not a lot of people know this, but the death of writer and producer Gary Marshall, who produced TV shows like Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley and a number of movies, just a much awarded talent in the entertainment industry. Not a lot of people know that he also produced a Bigfoot movie. And the name of the movie, let me see, is called They Call Him Sasquatch. It was produced in 2003, and Gary Marshall starred in it. And you know, and it was a comedy, and it kind of, you know, a little bit on the cheesy side, but it kind of poked fun of the Bigfoot community, the people that involve themselves in the chase and the look and the search for Bigfoot. And it's sort of, they had a character from almost every walk of life. They had a professor in there. They had an adventurer in there. They had two older guys that had spent their youth on it. And it was a very entertaining movie, and I didn't want that to slip through the cracks when Mr. Marshall passed away. I heard he had passed away, and he had produced this wonderful Bigfoot film. It never made it to the big screen. It was produced for DVD only. So if you would like to acquire a copy of it, they have it at Amazon. And you can, they call him Sasquatch 2003. And it has, let me see, the star, our actual star is Neil McDonough. And I know he starred in a lot of different things. Tom Bresnahan, Warren Berlinger, Gary Marshall, Vern L. Okarashi, Chuck McCann, Jeffrey Phelps, E. Sean Griffin, Jordan Black, and the list goes on. But get it if you can. Now, another topic I wanted to talk about tonight is, you know, I was thinking, well, it would be great if I could show some of my videos, because I deal in images, and a lot of my stuff that I have worked on, I could talk about it, but I can't show it. Well, then it occurred to me, well, I have quite a few audio files, and these audio files are interesting in their own right, and most of them were taken by researchers at night. They ran their cameras all night long. And some of them have proved to be what I think are authentic, and not only authentic, but they caught the Sasquatch or the Bigfoot in some kind of domination display. And the file is a little bit spooky to listen to. I know that, and I have photos of the, it's a table that they had set food on, and they had been doing this for quite a while. And then one night they decided to move the whole table inside of a fence. And they had some tin, this fence had tin interwoven, you know, along the sides. So Sasquatch shows up and his food's in a tent. So let me just let you listen to this. And this might be a first on American Dream. Let's see here. Okay, let me go to the other one. All right, now I call this file Woo Woo because that's the way it came to me on the tape. It's in a video form, but there's nothing to see. It's at night. But listen to this. And I want to warn you that there are people who have played this file in a loud way on home theater systems and had problems with visitors. So be aware. Here we go. Well, it didn't play. There it goes. He's going to rattle some tin. Okay, that's about it on that one. I'm not sure how well it came across, but if it came across like it did out here on my speakers, it's kind of creepy. Those cadences in that last little, I'm not sure whether it's singing or what it is. It seemed to go up and down octaves, and it was probably one of the strangest audio files that I've ever had sent me. This was taken in East Texas, and it was taken, I think, in 2003. The project, the researchers were carrying on at this location, lasted 4 years, from 2000 to 2004. And it resulted in quite a bit of evidence, both video and audio. And both. I was real glad to receive them and give them I was able to put them in their best forms, and they wanted my opinion on them. And, you know, this stuff occurs more than you think in the boondocks in the middle of the night. And these guys had managed to get reactions and get some on film, get some on video, and get some on audio. Now, here's another one. And this is why I don't recommend doing what these people did. This right here is a recording of a raid on a hen house. And you'll hear the gate opened up, this thing comes out. The lady inside is very sensitive about her chickens. And she runs out on the porch and she gives him a what for. And then he reacts by coming back at her. And the arrogant tone of the Sasquatch's rebuttal leads me to believe that it's not very... And don't feed the Sasquatch, you know, don't care for them. Because if you do you could have problems. Now here it goes. I shut the gate. Well, there you go. And it's I do not know for the life of me what kind of sound the Sasquatch made, if it made it with its mouth or if it popped its mouth with its hand. It's a hollow sound that's in rebuttal to this woman who came out and gave him the what for getting in her hen house. You have to understand that these people had been sort of endearing such as this, but not really, because they kind of brought it on themselves. It it's not a good thing to keep Sasquatch close to your house with food. I'm all for it if you can do it, if it's somewhere else. But if they come to your home, then you've got a real problem. And you can tell in the attitude of this one that it had lost its fear. It went and got the chicken with impunity. Eventually, there was a confrontation where the lady's husband went out and pursued the Sasquatch, and the Sasquatch knocked him to the ground. The Sasquatch fought each other at this site pretty regularly, and there's a couple of times they got it on video. I call it the altercation video, and it starts out with two smaller ones, and I say smaller, they're plenty big. A dark one and a light-colored one, and they're going at it, and then this huge one steps out. This Sasquatch is probably 12 feet, 13 feet tall, and very thin. But those other two took off running. I mean, they wanted no part of him. So all this is going on in close proximity to these people's homes. So if anyone ever asked me, would I recommend a habituation situation, I'd have to say no. I think that you're opening some cans there, a can of worms. If it's near your home, you know, that you stand that substantial risk. So that's all I could say. You know, it's in my 20 plus years of looking into this matter, I've seen a lot of things, and playing around as if these things were harmless is probably not a smart thing to do. The lady told me that there was one there that would regularly bloody the rest of them. And so they fought amongst each other. And how long do you think you would last if you got into an altercation with a Sasquatch? You know, it probably wouldn't take him long to dispatch you if that's what he chose to do. You know, so that's interesting. I hope those files come across.
It was very interesting, and we'll talk to you next month.
Okay.
Message. people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enjoy your
extra big-ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another
extra big-ass fries?
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
No, no.
I'm sorry you had
come on.
Trouble.
My kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer, long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life, it goes in eternity.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the Empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
And now, we return to another exciting episode of The Adventures of Mark. Wow, man. Cheetos and Moondust are both orange, far out. In his parents' basement, we again find Mark covered in Cheetos dust writing on his blog. Cheetos dust and Moondust are both orange. Her platform points include 100% clean renewable energy by 2030, an end to fracking and offshore drilling, living wage jobs for every American, replacing unemployment offices with employment offices. She said in 2012 that if elected, she will end unemployment in America, an idea that would never occur to Washington politicians because their corporate backers depend on the threat of unemployment to keep wages down. And now, wait, what's that? Do you hear that? We hear from the Bubba family. Bubba John, Bubba Jean, Bubba Barbara, Bubba Kate, and Bubba Carl in Cleveland. They got the RV parked out in Main Street. The Bubbas are inside watching the little black and white portable while the RV is surrounded by cops and protesters. The Bubbas put on their bonanza pajamas and pass around the popcorn. And there's the twins, Bubba Bubba, just now crawling in from their baths. We hear Bubba Barbara say, and she also wants to bring us, $15 an hour minimum wage, breaking up too big to fail banks, creation of worker and community cooperatives, a moratorium on GMOs and pesticides until they are proven safe, creation of a welcoming path to citizenship for immigrants, legalization of marijuana.
We have received word from an American in prison, an American Solzhenitsyn, an American Mandela, an American Thomas Jefferson, an American prisoner. I've heard a tapping in the walls. The word is getting around. An end to poverty, guaranteeing access to food, water, housing, and utilities, single-payer health care in the form of Medicare for all, tuition-free, world-class public education, preschool to university, no standardized testing or charters, cancellation of all existing student debt.
The American stuck in traffic is stuck in traffic on Interstate 35. It's bumper to bumper with boats and bicycles on bungee cords. The kids and the wife are asleep in the back of the black SUV. His phone is dead because he left his charger at home. All he has are 9 miles of red brake lights flickering on and off, on and off. The freckled kid in front of him flipping in the bird through the back window of a giant home on wheels. And his own thoughts. He has no choice but to think. He tries to stop it, tries to think of playing baseball in ninth grade, making that diving catch with Mary Lou watching, but it's no use. Oh, crap. Here it comes. The American stuck in traffic just lets it come like a big poop in the weeds in the woods. Jill Stein is the only real hope for America. Otherwise, it's one big long swirl around the toilet bowl, and that's the truth.
Our next guest of the evening is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero is a member of the Des Moines Catholic Worker. He's a former Catholic priest. He has spent over 6 years in federal prison for various actions in protest of the U.S. military machine. Chuck talked to Frank earlier today, and we will get that going right about now.
Hello, this is Frank.
Well, hello, Frank.
Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
I'm good.
Well, you know, I dropped down some notes. I wanted to talk about something that I don't think I've shared with you all. I'm trying to put myself in a different room. God, it's so hot, Chuck. We're like in the high 90s, humidity, you know, heat index got to be over 100. And it's just one of those days. But I want to, you know, all of the recent stuff having to do with racism and white privilege and Black Lives Matter. My initial response was, God, been there, done that on the racism thing. And I'm grateful, absolutely grateful that there's some Black leadership, young Black leadership, like the Black Lives Matter in the streets, calling for systemic change in race and justice system relationships, and it's just great. However, I'm dragged back to realize that we all have to go through some metamorphosis with racism, and my metamorphosis was. The summer of 1974, I was in my first year of seminary, and I had an aunt who lived in New York City, Manhattan. She was an artist. I just loved her dearly. And I wanted to spend time in New York City, and I got myself an assignment in a parish in the South Bronx, St. Augustine's, in the middle of one of the biggest Black and Puerto Rican ghettos in the country in 1974. And that was where I actually, that's where I learned to read for the first time. I got to the city and got to the rectory, and I didn't leave the rectory for at least 2 weeks, feeling very uncomfortable. They treated me well. And the pastor, Father Bob Jeffers, gave me lots of stuff to read. And honestly, I didn't read much. My BA was in PE and health. I was not an academic reading type guy, but that summer I read everything I could about what it meant to be Black. I read Malcolm X. I read Martin Luther King, Du Bois, Black history, Black liberation. I was just thriving on this stuff. And I did manage to get out of the rectory and make some very good lasting friends, a couple still today. And it was my first real immersion into systematic racism. In the story that I like to tell about it is that towards the end of my stay, once a week I'd go down to Lower Manhattan to the Bowery area and Greenwich Village. This is back in 1974, before Giuliano changed the whole damn city and regentrified it and made Manhattan the home for millionaires. No, this is really, it was still a neighborhood that had live music and cultural, radical, progressive, anti-war, communist union shit like that. It was just great, a great place to go. And it just took a few bus and the transfers and subways to get down there. And one night coming back to the South Bronx, and I'm feeling no pain because I'm over 21, I get off the subway. I got a transfer. I go up the tunnel to the block at 2 o'clock in the morning, holding my transfer with about 35 other people. Everyone's Black. And a woman comes out of the terminal yelling and screaming, goddamn, no good white son of a bitch, Black, white racist, get those conkies. We should burn these people down. And of course, I'm reading all this stuff about Black liberation. I'm understanding the systemic and structural issues, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, dear lady, I says, oh God, don't let the revolution happen now. Don't let it start here with this white guy that really doesn't matter. Eventually the woman raging, and everyone was uncomfortable, but she eventually said that she was dealing with the loss of an infant child whom she took to the clinic, who told her to come back the following weekend, and the child died. And that's what institutional racism all about. I mean, in my neighborhood, my family, one of my kids, brothers, sisters have a child that's sick. We get him to the hospital. We're in the Bronx. You know, that's what it means to suffer in a systematic racist place, because your mom or parent probably can't get you to the hospital. Then I came back home, and one thing I knew, I wasn't Black, and I was hungering for where can a white, middle-class, educated Midwest person stand with any integrity and follow the gospel. The very next year, I read a book called A Harsh and Dreadful Love by William Miller about the Catholic worker movement. I spent that summer, the next summer, at a Catholic worker house, and from then on, my life was marked by the Catholic worker movement. But it was the immersion of inner city black and Puerto Rican ghetto, New York City Bronx, coming into that and seeing that. And living in that, that really tripped me into seeking out the Catholic worker movement.
Wow, Frank, that was fascinating.
Well, I just wanted the story I picked up. I hope I didn't bore too many people.
If you did, then I don't know what's wrong with them.
All right, friend. Next week, God bless.
God bless.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Our next guest is Anthony Rayson. Anthony Rayson is an American anarchist, activist, and author. He runs the South Chicago ABC Zine Distro and publishes many zines and pamphlets, often containing the writing of inmates in American prisons. DePaul University holds a special collection of Anthony Rayson's work, which you can find online. And Chuck will be getting Anthony Rayson on the line right about now.
Evening.
Hello, Anthony.
Hi.
Well, welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. You're on the air.
Very good. Well, tonight, the coronation of Donald Trump, you know, so I think it's appropriate that I read from this remarkable book that's just been published July 2nd by James Patras, a brilliant sociologist. He's a Barnard Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Binghamton University in New York. He's the author of 68 books, 29 languages. He's written 560 articles in professional journals and over 2,000 articles in non-professional journals. He's widely quoted and carried on the internet. The book is called The End of the Republic and the Delusion of Empire. And it touches on what's going on right now, this whole Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump thing, Bernie Sanders. He goes all around the world talking about all the things that are going on right now. It's very succinctly written. It's really brilliant stuff. I'm going to hone in on Hillary Clinton from this book, starting on page 18. The chapter is entitled Clinton on the Road to Nuclear War. Okay, over the past quarter century, Hillary Clinton has promoted the most savage and destructive wars of our times. Moreover, the more directly she has been engaged in imperial policymaking, the greater her responsibility in implementing foreign policy, the closer we have come to nuclear war. To identify Hillary Clinton's path to global war, it is necessary to identify three crucial periods. Hillary's bloody history can be dated initially to her de facto joint presidency with husband Bill Clinton, 1993 to 2001. Stage one, the conjugal militarist president, 1993-2001. During Hillary Clinton's joint presidency with William Clinton, the Billary regime, the First Lady actively promoted an aggressive militarized takeover of Eastern Europe, the Balkans, the Middle East, and Eastern Africa, often under her favorite messianic doctrine of humanitarian intervention and regime change. This justified the relentless bombing of Iraq, destroying its infrastructure and blockading its population into starvation, while preparing to carve its territory into ethnic and religious divisions. Over 500,000 Iraqi children were murdered, as proudly justified by then Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, 1997-2001, and lauded by the Clintons. In the same manner, the U.S. humanitarian coalition air forces and their cruise missiles bombed Yugoslavia over 1,000 times from March 24 to June 11, 1999, in the course of subdividing the country into five backward, ethnically cleansed mini-states. Thousands of factories, public buildings, bridges, passenger trains, radio stations, embassies, apartment complexes, and hospitals were devastated. Over 1 million victims became refugees, while hundreds of thousands were wounded or killed. The conjugal presidency successfully carried out the bloodiest war of aggression in Europe since the Nazi invasion during World War II in order to subdivide an ethnically diverse and industrial advanced federation whose independent foreign policies had angered the Western corporate empire. The Clintons launched the military invasion of Somalia and East Africa to impose a vassal regime, leading to the death of many thousands in a regional imperial war. Faced with desperate popular resistance from the Somalis, the Clintons were forced to withdraw U.S. troops and bring in thousands of sub-Saharan African and Ethiopian mercenaries whose deaths would pass unnoticed by the U.S. electorate. From 1992 through 2001, the Clintons' war machine helped set up the Yeltsin kleptocratic vassal state in Russia, facilitating the greatest peacetime pillage of state resources in world history. In the post-Soviet breakup era, over $1 trillion of former public assets were seized, especially by U.S. and British allied Zionist gangsters, Clinton-affiliated officials and academics, and Wall Street bankers. Under Clinton's vassalage, the entire Soviet public health system was eliminated, and Yeltsin's Russia experienced a population decline of 4.3 million citizens, mostly due to diseases, alcohol and drug toxicity, suicide, malnutrition, unemployment, loss of wages and pensions, and an unprecedented epidemic of tuberculosis and infectious diseases once thought wiped out, like syphilis and diphtheria. Senator Hillary Clinton, War Crimes by Association, January 3, 2001 to January 21, 2009. During the George W. Bush dynastic regime, Senator Clinton supported the U.S. war machine, sowing death and destruction to the four corners of the earth, to quote Bush Jr., during which millions in Iraq and Afghanistan died or fled in terror. Bush had only deepened and expanded the mayhem that the Clinton conjugal presidency had begun a decade earlier. Senator Clinton promoted the U.S. direct and unprovoked invasion and occupation of Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. Senator Clinton embraced crippling economic sanctions against Iran, and she blessed Israel's military assault against the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza and Israeli massacres in Lebanon. Senator Clinton supported President Bush Jr.'s aborted coup against Venezuelan President-elect Hugo Chavez, 2002, a prelude to the coup attempts in Latin America that she directed later as U.S. Secretary of State. Hillary Clinton's senatorial term served as a transition linking her initial joint presidential period of wars of conquest to the next period. As U.S. Secretary of State under President Obama, she aggressively promoted global military supremacy. Secretary of Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Naked Militarism Unleashed, 2009-2013. Whatever restraints Clinton faced as senator dissolved as she ran amok during her term as Secretary of State. Across Europe, Africa, Latin America, and the Middle East, Hillary Clinton bombed, massacred, and dispossessed millions of families, shredding entire societies and dismantling the institutions of organized civil life for scores of millions. She never balked at the prospect of ethnocide and even joked that NATO might become Al-Qaeda's air force as she pushed for a no-fly zone over Syria. Secretary Clinton promoted the terror mercenary brigades invading Syria in a bid to regime change, the secular government al-Assad driving several million Syrian refugees into flight. Entire ancient Syrian Christian communities were wiped out under her reign of regime change. Secretary Clinton directed U.S. Air Force bombers and missiles to buttress the despotic Saudi monarchy's drive to obliterate Yemen. Clinton unleashed the most savage bombing against Libya, destroying the country and leading to the ethnic cleansing of 1.5 million sub-Saharan workers and black Libyans of sub-Saharan descent. Clinton joked over the tortured death of the wounded captive Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, whose nauseating, almost pornographic murder by anal impalement was documented as a kind of regime change snuff film. Less known is the earlier, almost Old Testament-type slaughter of several of Gaddafi's non-political children and five small grandchildren by a deliberate U.S. missile strike aimed at teaching the dictator that even his smallest grandchild cannot be hidden. Clinton, who bragged that her biblical role model is the ethnocidal Queen Esther, has declared unconditional support for Israel's war crimes against Palestinians in Gaza, the West Bank, and among the diaspora. Hillary endorsed and defended Israeli torture in prison camps for children, the elderly, and the homeless. Between 1999 and 2014, the Clinton Foundation received over $10 million from donors in Ukraine, which topped the list of donors for the period. During Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State, the Vicar Pinchuk Foundation also transferred at least $8.6 million to the Clinton charity between 2009 and 2013. Ukraine subsequently underwent regime change in 2013, promoted by Clinton protege Victoria Nuland and U.S. NGOs such as the National Endowment for Democracy. The forceful intervention by Russian President Vladimir Putin prevented Clinton's ethnic cleansing power grab in Crimea and the Donbass. The U.S. retaliated by pushing for massive European Union economic sanctions against Russia. Consistent with her pitiless biblical role model, Clinton openly threatened to obliterate Iran with a nuclear war and incinerate 76 million Iranians to please her uncle Netanyahu, a demented process that would poison 100 million Arabs and perhaps a few million Israelis. Even the insane Israeli Samson option was never dreamt of as being ordered from Washington, D.C. During her tenure as Secretary of State, Clinton actively obstructed any diplomatic moves to achieve a U.S.-Iran agreement on nuclear technology, parroting the Israeli military solution against regional rivals. Clinton has remained an unrepentant enemy to the emerging independent Latin American governments. In search of vassal states, Clinton promoted successful military coups in Honduras and Paraguay, but was defeated in Venezuela. She proudly touts the death squad regime in Honduras as among her foreign policy successes. Hillary backed the death squad and narco regimes in Colombia and Mexico, which killed over 100,000 civilians. On the path to global war, Madam Militarist has prepared to encircle Russia, stationing nuclear weapons in the Balkans and Poland. She promised that missiles would be placed in South Central Europe and Ukraine. Clinton raised the nuclear ante by hysterically claiming that the elected president, Vladimir Putin, was worse than ISIS, worse than Hitler. Repeatedly threatening global war.
And thank you.
So you get the idea.
We'll talk to you next month.
Okie dokie. Take care. Bye-bye.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Enjoy your
extra big ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another
extra big ass fries?
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make a purchase.
No, no.
I'm sorry you had
come on.
Trouble.
My kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Now,
from Port Orange, Florida, with stops at World News Trust and Nation of Change and many other sites. Here's Phil Ferrugio with It's the Umpire, Stupid.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. This is from my new column. It's on a couple of major sites. One is Information Clearinghouse, and you folks should go there to that site and check out the piece. It's called Brave Yes, Heroes No. And check out some of the comments I got, because it's very, very, very disheartening. There's a lot of neo-Nazis still out there, crazy people. Anyway, empires especially have always used propaganda to control and influence the populace. It takes courage for a minority of truth-tellers to speak up. For too long, many of we who knew better have remained silent on who the real heroes are. An anecdote told to me by my late neighbor Bill Klasny is quite insightful. Bill was a Chicago cop, one of those blue-collar, white working-class guys who never bought into the racism and other phobias that many of his fellow officers did. Very early one morning, Bill was driving his young son, Nick, to school. They passed by a bus stop and noticed a man dressed as a laborer, perhaps in the construction industry, waiting for a bus. The man was holding a lunchbox, similar to the one that Bill's son carried with him to school each day. Bill looked over to young Nick and said, "You see that guy there? Now that's a hero, son. He gets up early each morning, takes the bus to work, punches out the hours to support his wife and kids. He makes far less than the guys on the baseball cards that you think are heroes. They're not in his class." When Adolf Hitler sent his Wehrmacht army to invade Poland on the phony pretenses, the Nazi spin machine painted them as heroes. They were not. Were they brave? Yes. Most men put into a situation where they can get killed or maimed for life are surely brave. But that's about the end of it. Those German grunts were placed in harm's way for the sinister purposes of their leaders, and of course they were propagandized to believe differently. Such was and is the case with our own USA grunts involving Bush Sr.'s war on Iraq 1, Bush Jr.'s war on Iraq 2, and Obama's continuations of occupation 1 of Afghanistan and occupation 2 of Iraq. All those yellow ribbons and celebrations of our brave warriors and heroes should never hide the real truth. When will John and Joan Q. Public finally wake up? The sad reality of phony wars of empire is that the real war criminals, our leaders, never had to get off their duffs and be placed in harm's way. It is the grunts, the young kids, many of whom were recruited for either bonus money or promises of future employment, with only a few of them who fell for that fight them over there so they don't come here crap. Whatever the reasons for joining up, these kids learn to be brave and, sadly, for many, learn to become numb to the killing of innocent civilians and destruction of someone else's homeland, all for the schemes of empire. Then when they return home with no ear or eye or leg or arm or suffering from post-traumatic stress, how can we not feel for them? As with the GIs who returned home from another of our empire's phony wars in Vietnam, some of us blame them for the debacle. Obviously, you can condemn those of our soldiers who became sadistic and torturous or downright murderous, but even then we must ask ourselves, how would I have behaved if placed in such a terrible situation? Whatever the debate is on such matters, at least more and more of us should finally come to this conclusion. When our nation commits reprehensible and premeditated harm on another nation that posed no threat to us, we cannot call those who did our bidding heroes. The true heroes are the ones who came back from that crap and continue to speak up and demand accountability for the Bush-Cheney gang, the Blairs, Obamas, Hillarys, et al. And let us not forget the embedded war-carrying, water-carrying prestitutes, as Paul Craig Roberts refers to the journalists who served the empire so well. The truth is slowly coming to the surface as to this current threat of ISIL. Even some in important positions within this empire are beginning to recognize that there would never have been an ISIL if we didn't invade, destroy, occupy Iraq and Afghanistan. The ISIL fanatics could never have gotten to recruit as many as they have, period. My dear neighbors, it is time to speak up and demand a drastic pullback of this military-industrial empire and save those yellow ribbons for a holiday. Thank you.
if you don't want a man unhappy politically, don't give him two sides to a question to worry him. Give him one. Better yet, give him none. Let him forget there is such a thing as war. If the government is inefficient, top-heavy, and tax-mad, better it be all those than that people worry over it. Give the people contests they win by remembering the words to more popular songs or the names of state capitals or how much corn Iowa grew last year. Cram them full of non-combustible data. Chock them so damn full of facts they feel stuffed, but absolutely brilliant with information. Then they'll feel their thinking. They'll get a sense of motion without moving, and they'll be happy because facts of that sort don't change. Now for your local Earth news. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Polachek with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard.
Jill Stein's upcoming events. Friday, July 22nd, 11:30 a.m., On Contact with Chris Hedges, radio show. 1 p.m., Facebook live stream, New York Magazine. Monday, July 25, 3 p.m., March for Our Lives, a march at the Democratic National Convention, Philadelphia. Following the march, Dr. Jill Stein will hold a Power to the People rally from 6 to 9 p.m. at FDR Park, across from the Wells Fargo Convention Center. For more events and updates, JillStein2016.com. From Jill Stein, we broke the internet. There's only one way to say this. In the last week, our campaign has gone viral. Jill Stein has been a trending topic on Facebook for at least four of the last 7 days, and over 90,000 new people have liked my Facebook page. Know what that means? We got more new followers in the last week than Hillary Clinton. At the rate we were growing, we would have easily passed 100,000 new followers if not for the issue widely reported by many of our supporters that sometime around Sunday, Facebook limited your ability to invite friends to like my page. Apparently, this is standard Facebook procedure when a page is growing too rapidly, so don't panic. Instead, will you join me on Twitter? So we can make sure our people-powered revolution keeps going viral. Speaking of Twitter, we had an amazingly viral week on there, too, trending for the first time ever and adding over 27,000 new followers in a week. With all our success on social media, it's clearer than ever that millions of Americans, dare I say a silent majority, want better options for the highest office in our land than a warmonger or a corporatist. If you're not on Twitter yet, now's a great time to join while the Facebook page cools its jets. Twitter's not only a great tool to bypass the establishment gatekeepers and assert our green views and values in the public discussion, it's actually a social network where we can organize to set the trends that people talk about. My Power to the People plan creates deep system change. Moving from the greed and exploitation of corporate capitalism to a human-centered economy that puts people, planet, and peace over profit. It offers direct answers to the economic, social, and ecological crises brought on by both corporate political parties. And it empowers the American people to fix our broken political system and make real the promise of democracy. This plan will end unemployment and poverty, avert climate catastrophe, build a sustainable, just economy, and recognize the dignity and human rights of everyone in our society and our world. The power to create this new world is not in our hopes. It's not in our dreams. It's in our hands.
So that's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck, and so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Step up to the plate. Good to go. Take it to the next level. At the end of the day, bring something to the table. Have a good day. It is what it is. It's time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire. Our next guest of the evening is Larry Pinkney. Larry Pinkney is a Black Panther Party veteran, former Minister of Interior of the Republic of New Africa, former political prisoner, and the only American to have successfully self-authored his civil political rights case to the United Nations under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and we'll get to talk to him in Minneapolis right now.
Good evening, Larry Bentley speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks, Mike. First, I'd like to extend my greetings, as always, to all my brothers and sisters, black, white, brown, red, and yellow folks out there in New American Dreamland. All right. Let me get right down to it. Today, in this time that we're living, people are feeling a bit of despair. They're feeling very confused, et cetera, et cetera. I want to uplift your spirits. I want to read you an article from July of 2013. The article is entitled Everyday Ordinary People. That means black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. Everyday Ordinary People Taking Back Our Humanity from the Jaws of Despair. I began the article by paraphrasing, if I may, a quote from José Martí, the great, late, great José Martí, who said, "The first duty of a man, and I might add, a woman, is to think for himself or herself," end of quote. The other quote I used was by from the French philosopher Albert Camus, who said that real generosity towards the future lies in giving all to the present. I began by saying that an increasing amount of everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people in this nation and throughout Mother Earth are awakening to the fact that they have been cynically bamboozled and pimped by a relatively tiny national and global corporate/military power elite. People are being compelled to think for themselves, ourselves, as opposed to continuing to be gullible, hapless, systemic cannon fodder. You know, despite the bloody perpetual wars and the accompanying incessant propaganda from the corporate stream, vomit stream media emanating from the national and global power elite, the very fact that a critical mass of people have begun the process of awakening is an incredibly important development for humankind and for our precious Mother Earth, not to mention for the United States of America. Women and men in this nation and around the globe are slowly and steadily awakening from a perilous and manipulated, systemically induced mental slumber. While it is accurate to acknowledge the fact that there is a pressing need for many, many more of our sisters and brothers to awaken, to question, to challenge, and to think for themselves, the cleansing prairie fire of critically thinking people is spreading. I repeat, it is spreading. Sometimes, once we awaken, we become so absorbed and righteously incensed by the vicious, vampiric, formidable, blood-sucking actions on the part of the national and global power elite, et cetera, against us, right? That we neglect to take stock of the many very brave women and men who, for example, in just the last few years alone, have stepped forward, placing their reputations, their lives, and livelihoods on the line to challenge and shake the very foundations of the power elite's avaricious political, economic, and social system. It's really important to remember that no sacrifice is in vain as long as the collective struggle of everyday ordinary people continues. Our collective struggle is not a bowl of sweet-tasting cherry. It is tumultuous, but it is also both necessary and beautiful. We must strive to keep the words of Frederick Douglass in mind when he said, quote, "If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men and or women who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters, end of quote. The many waters of everyday ordinary people of all, and I stress, of all colors in this 21st century is in essence only just beginning in earnest. And despite the ongoing and nefarious machinations of the corporate military, power elite, the government, etc., it will ultimately become, as Frederick Douglass mentioned, it will ultimately become like the mighty ocean, a collective roar. So we've got to remember to educate ourselves and one another. We must creatively agitate and organize, but we must do this together. So having said that, I'm not going to read the entire article due to time constraints, but I also said that it's time to actualize the words of the late great French philosopher Albert Camus. Real generosity towards the future lies in giving all to the present, end quote. If there is to be an unfettered tomorrow for ourselves and for our offspring, we must critically think and act right now. I'm going to end it there with the words of the late, great Joe Hill, who said, quote, don't mourn, organize, end of quote. The time has come to take back our humanity from the jaws of despair. End of. So let me just say, and I'm going to end this very quickly, let me just say, my sisters and brothers, my brothers and sisters, do not be fooled. Do not be sucked in. Think, critically think. Talk with one another. Communicate. Notice I said talk with, not talk to. Talk with one another. We're living in very perilous and also very challenging time. What better time to be alive than today, right now? And let us draw from the lessons of history. We must not be ahistorical, meaning lacking an understanding of history. Let us draw from those lessons and move forward. Yes, the quote-unquote violence and murders going on in this country can, if we allow them to be, depressing. But we must understand that all of us collectively, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, hold the key to economic, political, and social systemic change. All of us together. Do not be sucked in by certain groups who claim to want this or claim to want that. But when you watch what they do, they're dividing. They're dividing. They're divisive. Divisive. We must not be sucked into that. So continue, my sisters and brothers. Continue. Do not be depressed. Do not let despair wrap its cloak around you. To the contrary, remember that all of us are important in this struggle, and all of us suffer. It is ridiculous to compare suffering and saying, oh, my suffering is greater than your suffering. Their suffering is suffering is suffering. Pain is pain. It's time to pull together. Time to pull together. We will have our differences, which is quite fine, but let's have those differences with the goal, the objective of unity, of coming together as brothers and sisters in the struggle. I'm going to end it right there. I hope this has in some way been encouraging to all of you out there. Every time I read it, believe it or not, it encourages me. I end by saying, as we said in the original Black Panther Party, not to be confused with the so-called new Black Panther Party. As we said in the original Black Panther Party, all power to the people. Thank you very much.
Larry, thank you. But before you go, since we have another 4 or 5 minutes, I wonder if you could address a couple of current things. In particular, can you tell us your impression of the Black Lives Matter group or movement?
Well, my response immediately to that is black lives have always mattered, but black lives do not matter in a void. In other words, all lives, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, all lives have to matter if any lives are to matter. I personally am very suspicious of the so-called Black Lives Matter. The very name, in my opinion, is divisive. We could Black Lives Matter too, of course, as in T-O-O, of course. But let us not get caught up in this thing about only, because what it implies is only Black Lives Matter. And the horrible tragedies and killings that have been going on for so very long, this is nothing new. People act like, oh, this has just begun. It didn't. And there were those of all colors who struggled against it, and we are continuing to struggle against it. So, to be very blunt, that's where I'm coming from with so-called Black Lives Matter. And by the way, if black lives truly matter, and only we, all of us, can make black, white, brown, red, and yellow lives matter, if they really matter, then let's begin in our own communities and stop the killing of each other. Let's stop it, okay? It's one thing, the police brutality, quote-unquote, is horrible enough. But we ourselves, unfortunately, also indulge in, irrespective to the rationale for it, we indulge in our own genocide. And this has got to stop, and only we, everyday ordinary people, can do it. Did I answer the question about what I, where I'm coming from with Black Lives Matter?
Well, I think so, Larry. Do you feel that they are they one of the divisive forces that you were talking about, or is it the media portrayal of them that is the divisive force?
It is both. it is absolutely both. And yes, that's the only thing I just have to answer directly. It is both. That's what I meant. Don't get sucked in. And particularly the so-called leadership, unquote, quote-unquote, of so-called Black Lives Matter. And, of course, the vomit stream media plays it up, plays it up, plays it up. And what does it do? It divides people, divides people. It's time for unity, not division.
In the last minute or so that we have here, how can we... But you mentioned that we can promote unity by starting with ourselves and our neighbors and the individuals. Is there anything else that you can think of that we can do that would help?
Yes, absolutely. We must educate ourselves. And when I say educate ourselves, I don't mean the bourgeois sense of the word or definition of the word. I mean, let us look at and investigate as many different sources as we can. Don't go for the ghosts. Just because you hear something on CNN, CBS, or even the so-called alternative media, check things out. Get at least three different sources before you reach a conclusion. But come to your own conclusion. Stop going for the ghosts. That's extremely important. Let's be informed, not disinformed or misinformed. Let us be informed, and let's inform each other. I learn from brothers and sisters every day. When I say brothers and sisters of all colors, every day. And this is extremely important as we carry on in this struggle.
Larry, I would like to thank you for being a regular guest on our show, and I'd like to especially thank you for what you brought to us tonight. It was really good, and we look forward to hearing from you again next month.
Thank you, my brother. You and Mike, take care. Stay strong.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Is your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? Well, squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
He unsnapped his holster. He pulled out his gun. Troy, the town cop, took aim at the protester down the barrel of his revolver. He took a deep breath, let it out, told himself, don't jerk, just squeeze. He put the little ball on the forehead of the gray-haired man in the ponytail, and then he thought, but wait. Just a damn moment. President Jill Stein would say this is wrong. President Jill Stein would say this is murder. Troy, the town cop, put down his gun and walked over to the protester. They were joined by Duke and Bubba Carl, who were also at the protest as undercover cowboys. They put their arms around each other and sang Kumbaya. Without even one sarcastic syllable. Tina Thompson, Taco Bell trainee, leaned out the window of the drive-thru and handed out another free Edward Snowden snow cone. Tina took the microphone and spoke to the next person in line and also to the whole restaurant over the loudspeaker. Hello, Taco Bell customers. Bernie Sanders just passed the torch to Dr. Jill Stein in this political revolution. Continues stronger than ever, especially since Stein is today the most powerful woman in politics. The Green Party Stein is now the liberal establishment's worst nightmare, a trustworthy and inspiring progressive candidate who stands for ideals and principle. No more of Clinton's prison lobbyist donors or FBI criminal investigations, just an honest woman named Jill Stein. Dr. Stein also correctly states if you don't want to vote for a warmonger or racist billionaire, there are more options. It might come as a surprise to Hillary voters, but most Americans are tired of voting for the lesser of two evils. And everyone cheered. Every freaking body.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio. My hometown at the end of the empire. In Moon Rock, there's a tattoo shop, a little shop, a tiny shop, tiny little shop of explorers, a limited partnership of sorts of Amelia and Fred, Fred and Amelia. Amelia Earhart, that is, tattoo artist of the heartland. The locals know her as Babs. Her shop is on Main Street, between the barbershop and the cafe, with a picture of a floundering big plane atop the front door. She got off course, or she's hiding out, waiting for her chance to do what she was asked to do so long ago by FDR, or maybe there was no spy mission for FDR, just a desire to fly around the world. She doesn't seem to care anymore. She just wants to be free to live out her days in Ohio, doing what she loves, talking about the Buckeyes and making tattoos. Navigator Fred Noonan runs the front desk at the little tattoo shop. He's got his shirt all up, his feet all up on the desk, his tongue sticking out, working on a full stomach tattoo of the Marshall Islands. Hey, Fred! Amelia shouts from the back room. He knows what she's going to say, so he revs the motor high. Amelia's going to ask again what they were doing out in the Pacific and what FDR asked them to do. Hey, Fred! Then she's going to ask how they crashed and how they survived and how they got back. Fred! And was it all a dream? And what they're doing in Ohio. Amelia has a bobblehead alien doll named Roswell on her desk. She's got a black Bilderberg birthday balloon stuck to the ceiling, signed by Prescott Bush. There's black and white photos of the JFK, RFK, and MLK shootings on her wall, all from angles and vantages that have never appeared elsewhere. On her desk is a stack of letters from the passengers of the planes of September 11, 2001 that she hasn't had time to answer. And one from Timothy McVeigh, postmarked with a tropical stamp. There's a CD in the machine, the director's cut of the Sandy Hook shooting. She watched it last night, stayed up too late, now she's paying for it. Her niece is visiting for a few days this summer, Amelia Rose Earhart. She just completed a flight around the world that covered Auntie Amelia's same flight, ending up in Ohio. The niece wants to just hang out, maybe learn the art of tattooing and get a Buckeyes jersey and eat corn with her bare hands while sitting on the railroad tracks and running her bare toes through the hard red rocks. And she says she's waiting for someone. Amelia walks up front, tells Fred she's going to the store for cigarettes, and all the while, she's just staring up at the sky, tripping a few times, then bending down to pluck a yellow tulip from somebody's prim front yard garden and sticking it behind her ear. "Where are you?" she whispers, with wide, wet eyes, just before she bumps into the produce manager from Too Much Food, bending her tulip. He gives her a black tulip as she hands him the yellow tulip, without quite knowing why. She goes in to open her mailbox with her key and pulls out a manila envelope marked with a 1937 stamp postmarked Manila and forwarded to the Bangkok bar in East Minneapolis, and then on to Ohio. There's someone else in the post office pulling something out of his box. Amelia asks the young man, "What did you get?" He turns to her and says, "I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage." She runs her long purple fingernail under the flap, cuts herself, licks her finger and swallows the blood, pulls out a black and white 8x10 glossy photograph of she and Fred standing on the beach on some island, their arms around the shoulders of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Joe DiMaggio, Al Capp, and Al Capone. And now, that photograph, copies of that photograph have turned up in the teacher's lounge of St. Regis Jesuit High School in Denver, as well as the condiment table of the State Roads Department Paint Crew Coffee Corner on Harney Street in Omaha, Nebraska, and in the dining car of the Amtrak California Zephyr at midnight. Into that dark dining car, screeching through Del Mar, empty but for the tired cook smoking at the bar, comes a tall man in a tweed suit, wearing a Stetson with a Miami Dolphins sticker, steel-toed boots marked Made in Havana, and carrying a briefcase handcuffed to his arm. He sits down in the back booth, stares out the window, opens the briefcase with a key he draws so slowly out of his nose. He lays the briefcase flat on the table, reverently draws out the 8x10 black and white glossy photograph of Amelia Earhart, Fred Newton, and Joe DiMaggio, Al Capone, Al Cap, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, dining in a window booth at Alice's restaurant. The thin man in the Stetson autographs the photograph with a purple magic marker, leaves the purple magic marker resting on the 8x10 glossy photograph, tips his cap to the smoking cook, and exits the dining car. The tired cook, smoking at the bar, slumps over, picks up the 8x10 glossy photograph as the purple magic marker rolls to the floor. He opens a window, slides the photograph out, and it is caught by the wind and then by a biker sitting by the tracks in the woods on his black 1946 Indian Chief cycle. The passenger on the bike wears a black leather jacket with Oswald stitched on the back. They take off into the woods, 1/2 mile exactly, hand the 8x10 glossy photograph to a 10¾-foot jet black Bigfoot named Bubba Brad, just as a craft hovering above the valley turns on its landing lights. Alan, the alien, the driver of the craft marked Malaysian 370, shines a light on Bubba Brad, and the 10¾-foot Bigfoot glides up the beam of light as if on an escalator. As he enters the shuttle bus, he hands the 8x10 glossy photograph to a man wearing a plastic sheriff's badge that says Secret Agent. The man is from East Grand Forks. He is, of course, Zach Black, an extra in the movie The French Connection, who's done other things since then. Bubba Brad the Bigfoot whispers to Zach Black, "Beware the Ebola bunny," which causes Zach Black to wonder about the overall sincerity of Bubba Brad the Bigfoot, but he has a job to do. And so Zach Black puts the glossy photograph under a Class 51 flashy thing electron microscope and sees the markings embedded in the photo that say Ukraine, Israel, Syria, Gaza, Libya, Egypt, Iran, ISIS, ISIL, buried at sea, Jessica Lynch, Pat Tillman, torture photos at Guantanamo, and Black Ops rendition cruises in a 61 gray Studebaker from the A&W on North Street in East Dubuque to the Moose Lodge in Davenport. He sees something more in the embedded microchip thing photo parts. Something about Amelia's niece. Something about her not being who she says she is. something about her being a former cheerleader for the Iowa Hawkeyes. Oh my, can this be? He can also see that she has a tattoo on the small of her back. A monarch butterfly, a honeybee, and a decapitated Hawkeye mascot with a Cheshire Cat smile. And below that it says in ancient Mayan script, MH17, David Saylor, Charlie Sheen, CIA Obama, Wile E. Coyote, beep beep, and the number, 867-5309. And Black looks up and asks, so nobody is in the room, waiting for who, this Amelia Rose Denise? Waiting for who? And the thought comes into Black's head from somewhere, somehow, to every man his little cross, till he dies and is forgotten. And then the thought is gone, and he returns to his task. This niece here, waiting for who? Waiting for, I don't know. Black hears a voice in the dark room. He turns around and says, "Who's there?" Nobody answers. He says louder, "Who's there?" Silence. Black gets a piercing pain in his temple, and an image is projected into his brain, and it is the Ebola Bunny, and then a deep foreigner voice. "Stay thirsty, my friends." And then the Ebola Bunny turns into the face of Bill Hicks. And Zach Black hears Hicks speak. "I was over in Australia. They celebrate Easter the same way we do, commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus by telling our children a giant bunny rabbit left chocolate eggs in the night. Now, I wonder why we're effed up as a race. Anybody got any idea? You know, I've read the Bible. I can't find the word bunny or chocolate anywhere in a fucking book. Where do they come up with this stuff? Why not Goldfish left Lincoln Logs in your sock drawer? As long as they're making crap up, you know, go hog wild. At least the goldfish with a Lincoln Log on its back going across your carpet has some miraculous connotations. Mommy, I woke up today, there was a Lincoln Log in my sock drawer. That's the story of Jesus." And then more silence. And then a door, squeaking open, squeaking closed. And something rolls slowly, unevenly, as a lopsided bowling ball across the floor of the darkened room. It bumps against Black's shoe. He leans down, squats, looks close. Black gasps loudly, stands quickly to get away from the head of Officer Obie. And underneath the head is a billfold made from really genuine Afghanistan goat skin. And inside the billfold is a passport of Muhammad Atta, and another passport that says Adam Lanza, and then another passport that says the Big Bad Wolf, and then one that says only ISIS. And somewhere a radio plays. The door of a red VW microbus is open. The engine is smoking but running. The red VW microbus is smacked into a tree. Blood everywhere. Implements of destruction scattered everywhere. Inside bodies, above and around the red VW microbus. And all those inside the red VW microbus. Timothy McVeigh, Barbara Olson, George W. Bush, Crystal Campbell, Paul McCartney, Buddy Holly, George H.W. Bush, Mrs. Calabash, Barbara Bush, John Stewart, Rachel Maddow, Todd Beamer, Nancy Lanza, Jack Ruby, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Karl Rove, Condoleezza Rice, Bart Simpson, the Coen Brothers, Stanley Kubrick, Walt Disney, John Dulles, Buzz Aldrin, Tom Hanks are dead, all dead. And sitting on top of the VW microbus, on the tip top of the microbus, on the very top of the VW microbus, with etchings like cave drawings in the dust of the top of the VW microbus, like crop circles, like butt prints, like butt crop circles, way up there on the roof, wearing bell-bottom jeans, nose shoes, flower shirts, sporting San Francisco Giants authentic team jerseys, and wearing flowers in their hair and strumming air guitars, playing air flutes, harmonicas, a whole air instrument orchestra, but no bassoons, are Don Hochsprung, Timothy McVeigh, Muhammad Atta, Thane Eugene Caesar, Barbara Olson, Gene Rosen, and Adam Lanza. Secret agent Zach Black strains, stands still, with the head of Officer Obi still touching his toe. He strains all the limits and boundaries of credulity and space and time to hear the radio in the red VW microbus. And on the radio, in the red VW microbus, on the radio still playing, comes one strong voice. I do solemnly swear. It's the voice of Jill Stein in January being sworn in, and the people are rejoicing, and she is joining them in singing all around the podium, up and down the street, on the radio, TV, yelling out the windows in Jersey, in Jackson, in Johannesburg, in Jamaica, and in Julesburg. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Mystery, deceit, tattoos, tattered tulips, manila envelopes, go big red, Harney Street, purple magic markers in Del Mar, landing lights, East Grand Forks, Isis, ISIL, A&W, Hawkeyes, beep beep, Fred and Amelia, the Ebola Bunny, Father Rapers, Air Orchestra, crop butt circles, Jill Stein's election night celebrations and balls. It's all there waiting for you in the next episode of Ohio Inc. Amelia Earhart, tattoo artist of the Heartland. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here. The New American Dream Radio Show, streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thanks to our guests, MK, Frank, Phil, Larry, Anthony. Show archives are available at newdream.us. And as always, we apologize for mistakes and are planning right now to make fewer mistakes next week. If you would like to send a donation to the Moyne Catholic Worker, checks can be made out to the Berrigan Catholic Worker House and sent to Phil Berrigan Catholic Worker House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, and I still don't have the correct zip code, and that's my fault, but I'll try and get it next week. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hochsprung. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries, it isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one.
People's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported.